Sermons for Sunday by St. Alphonsus Liguori. Sermon number 24 for the fifth Sunday after Pentecost, on the sin of anger. Whosoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. Matthew 5:2. Anger resembles fire. Hence, as fire is vehement in its action, and by the smoke which it produces obstructs the view, so anger makes men rush into a thousand excesses and prevents them from seeing the sinfulness of their conduct, and thus exposes them to the danger of the judgment of eternal death. Anger is so pernicious to man that it even disfigures his countenance. No matter how comely and gentle he may be, he shall, as often as he yields to the passion of anger, appear to be a monster and a wild beast full of terror. But if anger disfigures us before men, how much more disformed will it render us in the eyes of God? In this discourse I will show, in the first point, the destruction which anger unrestrained brings on the soul, and in the second, how we ought to restrain anger in all occasions of provocation which may occur to us. First point, the ruin which anger unrestrained brings on the soul. Saint Jerome says that anger is the door by which all vices enter the soul. Anger precipitates men into resentments, blasphemies, acts of injustice, detractions, scandals, and other iniquities. For the passion of anger darkens the understanding and makes a man act like a beast and a madman. My eye has lost its sight through indignation. Job 7:7. David said, "My eye is troubled with wrath." Psalm 30, verse 10. Hence, according to St. Bonaventure, an angry man is incapable of distinguishing between what is just and unjust. In a word, St. Jerome says that anger deprives a man of prudence, reason, and understanding. Hence, St. James says, "The anger of man worketh not the justice of God." James 1:20. The acts of a man under the influence of anger cannot be conformable to the divine justice, and consequently cannot be faultless. A man who does not restrain the impulse of anger easily falls into hatred towards the person who has been the occasion of his passion. According to St. Augustine, hatred is nothing else than persevering anger. Hence, St. Thomas says that anger is sudden, but hatred is lasting. It appears then that in him in whom anger perseveres, hatred also reigns. But some will say, "I am the head of the house, I must correct my children and servants, and, when necessary, I must raise my voice against the disorders which I witness." I say in answer, it is one thing to be angry against a brother, and another to be displeased at the sin of a brother. To be angry against sin is not anger, but zeal, and therefore it is not only lawful, but it is sometimes a duty. But our anger must be accompanied with prudence, and must appear to be directed against sin and not against the sinner. For if the person whom we correct perceive that we speak through passion and hatred towards him, the correction will be unprofitable and even mischievous. To be angry then against a brother's sin is certainly lawful. St. Augustine says, "He is not angry with a brother who is angry against a brother's sin." It is thus, as David said, we may be angry without sin. "Be ye angry and sin not." Psalm 4:5. But to be angry against a brother on account of the sin which he has committed is not lawful, because, according to St. Augustine, we are not allowed to hate others for their vices. Hatred brings with it a desire of revenge, for, according to St. Thomas, anger, when fully voluntary, is accompanied with a desire of revenge. But you will perhaps say, "If I resent such an injury, God will have pity on me, because I have just grounds of resentment." Who, I ask, has told you that you have just grounds for seeking revenge? It is you, whose understanding is clouded by passions, that say so. I have already said that anger obscures the mind and takes away our reason and understanding. As long as the passion of anger lasts, you will consider your neighbor's conduct very unjust and intolerable. But when your anger shall have passed away, you shall see that his act was not so bad as it appeared to you. But though the injury be grievous, or even more grievous, God will not have compassion on you if you seek revenge. No, he says, "Vengeance for sins belongs not to you, but to me. And when the time shall come, I will chastise them as they deserve. Revenge is mine, and I will repay them in due time." Deuteronomy 32:35. If you resent an injury done to you by a neighbor, God will justly inflict vengeance on you for all the injuries you have offered to him, and particularly for taking revenge on a brother whom he commands you to pardon. "He that seeketh to revenge himself shall find vengeance from the Lord," Man to man reserveth anger, and doth he seek remedy of God? He that is but flesh nourisheth anger, and doth he ask forgiveness of God? Who shall obtain pardon for his sins? Ecclesiasticus 28:1-5. Man, a worm of flesh, reserves anger and takes revenge on a brother. Does he afterwards dare to ask mercy of God? And who, adds the sacred writer, can obtain pardon for the iniquities of so daring a sinner? How can he who will not obey the command of God to pardon his neighbor expect to obtain from God the forgiveness of his own sins? Let us implore the Lord to preserve us from yielding to any strong passion, and particularly to anger. Give me not over to a shameful and foolish mind. Ecclesiasticus 23:6. For he that submits to such a passion is exposed to great danger of falling into a grievous sin against God or his neighbor. How many, in consequence of not restraining anger, break out into horrible blasphemies against God or his saints. But at the very time we are in a flame of indignation, God is armed with scourges. The Lord said one day to the prophet Jeremiah, "What seest thou, Jeremiah?" And I said, "I see a rod watching." Jeremiah 1:11. "Lord, I behold a rod watching to inflict punishment." The Lord asked him again, "What seest thou?" And I said, "I see a boiling cauldron." Verse 13. The boiling cauldron is the figure of a man inflamed with wrath and threatened with a rod, that is, with the vengeance of God. Behold then the ruin which anger unrestrained brings on man. It deprives him first of the grace of God and afterwards of corporal life. Envy and anger shorten a man's days. Ecclesiasticus 30:26. Job says, "Anger indeed killeth the foolish." Job 5:2. All the days of their life, persons addicted to anger are unhappy because they are always in a tempest. But let us pass to the second point, in which I have to say many things which will assist you to overcome this vice. Second point, how we ought to restrain anger in the occasions of provocation which occur to us. In the first place, it is necessary to know that it is not possible for human weakness in the midst of so many occasions to be altogether free from every motion of anger. No one, as Seneca says, can be entirely exempt from this passion. All our efforts must be directed to the moderation of the feelings of anger which spring up in the soul. How are they to be moderated? By meekness. This is called the virtue of the Lamb, that is, the beloved virtue of Jesus Christ. Because, like a lamb, without anger or even complaint, he bore the sorrows of his passion and crucifixion. He shall be led as a sheep to the slaughter, and dumb as a lamb before his shearer, and he shall not open his mouth. Isaiah 53:7. Hence he has taught us to learn of him meekness and humility of heart. Matthew 11:29. Oh, how pleasing in the sight of God are the meek, who submit in peace to all crosses, misfortunes, persecutions, and injuries. To the meek is promised the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the meek, for they shall possess the land. Matthew 5:4. They are called the children of God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Matthew 5:9. Some boast of their meekness, but without any grounds, for they are meek only towards those who praise and confer favors upon them. But to those who injure or censure them, they are all fury and vengeance. The virtue of meekness consists in being meek and peaceful towards those who hate and maltreat us. With them that hated peace, I was peaceful. Psalm 119:7. We must, as St. Paul says, put on the bowels of mercy towards all men and bear one with another. Colossians 3:12-13. You wish others to bear with your defects and to pardon your faults. You should act in the same manner towards them. Whenever then you receive an insult from a person enraged against you, remember that a mild answer breaketh wrath. Proverbs 15:1. A certain monk once passed through a cornfield. The owner of the field ran out and spoke to him in very offensive and injurious language. The monk humbly replied, "Brother, you are right. I have done wrong. Pardon me." By this answer, the husbandman was so much appeased that he instantly became calm and even wished to follow the monk and to enter into religion. The proud make use of the humiliations they receive to increase their pride, but the humble and the meek turn the contempt and insults offered to them into an occasion of advancing in humility. St. Bernard says, "He is humble who converts humiliation into humility." A man of meekness, says St. John Chrysostom, is useful to himself and to others. The meek are useful to themselves because the time of humiliation and contempt is for them the time of merit. Hence, Jesus Christ calls his disciples happy when they shall be reviled and persecuted. Matthew 5:11. Hence, the saints have always desired to be despised as Jesus. The meek are useful to others because, as the same Saint Chrysostom says, there is nothing better calculated to draw others to God than to see a Christian meek and cheerful when he receives an injury or an insult. The reason is because virtue is known by being tried, and as gold is tried by fire, so the meekness of men is proved by humiliation. My spikenard, says the spouse in the Canticle of Canticles, sent forth the odor thereof. Chapter 1, verse 11. The spikenard is an odoriferous plant, but diffuses its odors only when it is torn and bruised. In this passage, the inspired writer gives us to understand that a man cannot be said to be meek unless he is known to send forth the odor of his meekness by bearing injuries and insults in peace and without anger. God wishes us to be meek even towards ourselves. When a person commits a fault, God certainly wishes him to humble himself, to be sorry for his sin, and to purpose never to fall into it again. But he does not wish him to be indignant with himself and give way to trouble and agitation of mind. For while the soul is agitated, a man is incapable of doing good. My heart is troubled, my strength hath left me. Psalm 37, verse 11. Thus when we receive an insult, we must do violence to ourselves in order to restrain anger. Let us either answer with meekness, as recommended above, or let us remain silent. And thus, as Saint Isidore says, we shall conquer. But if you answer through passion, you shall do harm to yourselves and others. It would be still worse to give an angry answer to a person who corrects you. Some are not angry, though they ought to be indignant with those who wound their souls by flattery, and are filled with indignation against the person who censures them in order to heal their irregularities. Against the man who abhors correction, the sentence of perdition has, according to the wise man, been pronounced. Because they have despised all my reproofs, the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. Proverbs 1:30. Fools regard as prosperity to be free from correction, or to despise the admonitions which they receive, but such prosperity is the cause of their ruin. When you meet with an occasion of anger, you must in the first place be on your guard not to allow anger to enter your heart. Some persons change color and get into a passion at every contradiction, and when anger has got admission, God knows to what it shall lead them. Hence it is necessary to foresee these occasions in our meditations and prayers. For unless we are prepared for them, it will be as difficult to restrain anger as to put a bridle on a horse while running away. When we meet with crosses, persecutions, and injuries, let us turn to God, who commands us to bear them with patience, and thus we shall always avoid anger. Remember the fear of God, and be not angry with thy neighbor. Ecclesiasticus 28:8. Let us give a look at the will of God, which disposes things in this manner for our merit, and anger shall cease. Let us give a look at Jesus crucified, and we shall not have courage to complain. Saint Eleazar, being asked by his spouse how he bore so many injuries without yielding to anger, answered, "I turn to Jesus Christ, and thus I preserve my peace." Finally, let us give a glance at our sins, for which we have deserved far greater contempt and chastisement, and we shall calmly submit to all evils. Saint Augustine says that though we are sometimes innocent of the crime for which we are persecuted, we are nevertheless guilty of other sins which merit greater punishment than that which we endure.